the Junior Kekuweba Junior Show, starring Junior Kekuweba Junior.
Yeah, let's get it on.
Join Junior along with the Wayne Borge Band as he makes any kind from Hawaii.
Yeah, no idea.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Junior Kekuweba Junior.
Husband, Hawaii. Hi, you, Hawaii. Oh, boy, didn't we fire that announcer? I thought he was gone already. All right. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Junior Kekuweba Jr. And we want to get right into the attitude of gratitude today. We don't want to bore you with any statistics, although we do have many new listeners. Actually, in the United States, for a change. Yeah, more states. So anyway, but thank you for listening wherever you are. Thank you, especially throughout the world, because we send you aloha from Hawaii. Now, Hawaii is part of the United States. I've got a lot of questions on TikTok, like, hey, is Hawaii a country? No, Hawaii is, well, it's kind of a double-edged sword. It is a part of the United States. It's occupied by the United States, technically, and then the Kingdom of Hawaii still exists. So there's your complex answer right there. There you go, Hawaiians. There you go. And when you are listening to the show, you are an honorary Hawaiian. So when I say Hawaiians, I'm talking to you, no matter where you are and no matter where you come from. All right. So on today's episode, we're going to talk about when I found out wrestling was scripted. And the reason why this is part of life coaching is because with my life coaching, I red pill people. Okay. Now, red pill, I know there's a controversy now, like, oh, you can't use red pill. You can't use blue pill. You can't say those things. You can't, you know, you can get canceled. Okay. If you want to cancel me, you can. All right. You have my permission to cancel me. All you have to do to cancel me is change to another podcast. That's all you have to do. Real simple. Just, okay, cancel uncle, cross him off the list, right? And just take me off your podcast. Okay. But red pill is an expression for, like, truth telling, right? Like hardcore truth telling. Like, hey, you know what? This is the way it really is. Okay. Now, that being said, let me preface this with a little bit of information. Okay. Let Uncle take you on the left. Okay. We're going to the left. Everything you own in a box to the left. There we go. All right. There's your comedy right there. Okay. So no, but what I really mean is a lot of things in society, and I mean a lot of things, are presented to us backwards and upside down, and they don't tell us the truth. Now, this starts, you know, when you're young, right? Okay, you got Santa Claus, right? And then when you grow up, you know, you hear the Santa is an anagram for Satan, and you hear all this stuff. Okay, now whether this applies to some actual fact and it's actually evil or not, or, you know, it goes back to the legend of Krampus and you know, just look it up for yourself, but I don't want to go into it. But yeah, there's a lot of things, right? So one of the things in my life, and one of the experiences, because I always talk about my life experiences, and one of my life experiences was that, so we talk about manifestations, right? I was manifesting at a very early age to be a professional wrestler, because that's what I thought was cool, right? You know, and I'm talking about when I was in like fourth grade, okay? I'm talking little kid, okay, fourth grade. Now, I did not know that a lot of the things when I was a kid, like, manifested in my adult life. Like, it was freaky. It was like, whoa, what? But there was a certain point in my life, right, when I, you know, accidentally found broadcasting school. And, you know, I mentioned it on another podcast briefly, but what that really was I had actually gone to apply for a carpet cleaning job. And on the way out, I looked at the building directory because I had to find a job. And I was 17 years old, out of high school. I had told my mom, put me on the plane, I'm never coming home, kind of thing, you know. And I left for another island, for the island that I live on now, right? And so anyway, long story short, I saw the broadcasting school. I went upstairs. I auditioned. They said, hey, you're perfect. You know, you're perfect for broadcasting. You're the man. You could be the man. You know, that kind of thing. I didn't know they told that to everybody, but they told it to everybody, right? So But anyway, but they told that to me, right? And I believed them because I was 17. All right. So, and then, you know, I asked my mom, can I go to trade school? And she thought like I was going to say something like plumbing or electrician or, you know, something that made money, right? No, I said, this is a trade school, but it's for radio. It's broadcasting, radio and television. And, my mom was like, you know, she was all into it. She still is all into education, right? So anything education was good for her. So she said, okay. And she wrote the check and I went to broadcasting school. You know, she'll never listen to my podcast, but even, you know, in case she does, thank you, Mom. So that happened, right? And then I started thinking, like, because I wanted to be an entertainer, right? And we always mentioned that, you know. But that was the thing. And so I thought, well, like if I got into the radio business, right, it would include the music business. I would meet the music people. I would make connections. They would discover me and they would sign me to the contract and I would be discovered, right? Wrong. Okay. I had to do that part myself. I had to do it myself. And it took like a lifetime. Anyway, but that's what I thought. So, you know, broadcasting school happened. Now, down the road, after a few radio stations, right, I'm working at this radio station and they do a promotion with this wrestling company. It's no longer in existence and the founder is no longer with us, you know, and I can mention the name, but it was The Rock's grandmother. So The Rock, right, comes from this wrestling dynasty family, kind of thing, right? His uncles, relatives and his dad. And his father was High Chief Peter Maivia. And, you know, I can mention that part. The other names I'm not going to mention because, you know, it's not really, you know, too relevant. Although I'm very grateful to these people. And they paid me well. And I was a young kid. I was 27 years old, right? And so the way that I got involved with wrestling, you know, because this, so as soon as I figured it out, you know, like around maybe, I don't know, maybe 18, 19, I'm going, no, I can't be a professional wrestler because I'm doing this broadcasting, but because I'm doing this broadcasting thing, I could interview the wrestlers. I could be the commentator, right? And that idea intrigued me, right? Because when I watched wrestling as a kid, the best part was the locker room interviews. And they would take the guy, they would take the announcer sometimes, and they would push him up against the thing, you know, the lockers, and scream and yell at him. And stuff. And I thought it was funny, like when it happened. I thought it was funny, and that's why we tuned in. We wanted to see the interviews. That was like the highlight of everything, right? The matches were good, but the interviews was where you really got the show kind of thing, right? So anyway, I thought, well, I could be like that, right? Because I physically can't be a wrestler, apparently, right? I looked in the mirror. I go, no, Brian, not you. Cannot. So you know, and there comes a time, you know, when you have to look at, you know, what you're trying to manifest or what you want to manifest or what you want to do, what you fantasize about, those things, because Einstein said those are the preview of the coming attractions, your imagination. So whatever you imagine, right, and you spend time daydreaming about and you spend time fantasizing about, okay, because you know how people go, oh, that's a fantasy. Get that out of your head. No, don't do that. I'm here to tell you that's like everything that you're fantasizing about because of the fact that you can fantasize about it, okay, it's valid. It can and will happen if you stick to it and don't change your mind. Okay, so I didn't change my mind. You know, I'm pretty stubborn like that, right? So anyway, that's in the back of my head, but that's an idea. Because, you know, these guys are telling me, well, you could do radio, you could do television, you could do all kinds of stuff with this training. Well, I never lasted with my training. I got out like 2 months. After 2 months, I actually got into a radio station. And these guys were like, you know, come work with us, you know, whatever. And then during the, because the guys, the teachers all belonged to different radio stations. They were all working live on the radio. So they would let us go hang out and go see what, you know, it was part of the school thing. Like if you belong to the club, you belong to the school, you pay the tuition, you get to go and, you know, whatever. So thanks to my mom, I got to go and, you know, do it. And so I got to know these guys. I got to hang out and stuff. And pretty soon I got a, you know, my first radio job, right? Which I think we went over on one of the podcasts because it was, you know, I had to make a decision, right? And I chose radio over my dispatcher position at a security guard company, you know, when I think I was 21, something like that. But anyway, best decision I ever made. Do I regret it? No, never. Like, hands down, never, ever regret that. All right, but here's the thing, right? When I was 27, I started working for this other radio station. I was doing part-time, I was doing weekends, and I was doing production, and I, you know, making radio commercials, that kind of thing, right? And I got real good at that. That was, like, my favorite thing. And so, because it involved imagination. Not only that, it involved putting pictures in other people's imagination, which is what actually led me to be effective as a morning radio personality, you know, second banana, which I eventually became. But at this radio station, I was doing weekends, I was doing commercials, or, you know, that kind of thing. So we met these people from this wrestling company. And I think I can mention it. It was World Pacific Wrestling. It's no longer in existence. This was so far back. This was back in the 80s. Okay. I don't even want to say what year, but yeah, it was in the mid 80s, towards the late 80s. Okay. And I worked it, and the station was an AM station. Believe it or not, AM stations were still a thing. Okay. That's how long ago this was. And so it was an AM radio station. So they came and, you know, and we met them and they were nice to us and they were buying time. They were buying advertising time on the radio station that I worked at. And so they invited me and this other guy, okay, I'm not going to mention his name, but you know, not for a negative reason or anything. It's just my attorney always tells me, dude, don't mention names. I'm like, okay. But anyway, and our disclaimer is some of the names have been changed to, protect the obvious. Okay. So this other guy and I get invited to do this, you know, they go, oh, you can come down and announce a match. And I was like, wow, really? So it wasn't that we could announce the match like you see on TV. It was like we could go and introduce a wrestler. That's what they meant. You can go come and announce a match. You can come and, you know, introduce the rest, you know, two of the wrestlers in a match kind of thing. And so I went down, right? And I figured, like, every time I got an opportunity in my head, I was thinking, like, this could be the one. This could be the chance. This could be, the, you know. So I always gave it 1,000%. Okay. So I did like my best game show voice, like my announcer voice, you know. And back in the day, there was this guy, I forgot his first name. His last name was Lennon. And he was a famous boxing announcer that used to do like the Muhammad Ali matches, like all these, you know, Joe Frazier, George Foreman kind of matches, right? And we used to watch heavyweight boxing all the time. And this guy, Lennon, had a way of introducing, right? So that's what I knew as to be like the top, the you know, like if you did that, if you did it like him, you were doing it right kind of thing. So when it was my turn to announce the matches, right, I go 1,000% and I go game show voice, right? In the red corner, you know, that kind of, I don't want to scream in your ear, but you know, that kind of thing, right? You know, hailing from such and such a place, coming in at 275 pounds, you know, that kind of thing, right? And I gave it 1,000%, right? So there was a little acting involved, you know, there was a little, yeah, I change in my voice kind of thing, you know, I had to do that. And, you know, I do different voices. The people that have followed my career know that I do over 100 different voice types. And so there I was, you know, doing my best Mr. Lennon impression, right? And I go for it, and I go like 1,000% on this one match. Well, that was enough to have these people invite me back one more time. You know, so and when they invited me back, I was like, yeah, like this is gonna happen. This is you know, this is real, right? This is happening. And so I had to pinch myself the second time, right? And this was at a place called the Blaisdell Arena in Honolulu on the island of Oahu. Now, this is a big arena. And back in the day, this was like the main place for concerts. We have three main concert venues on the island of Oahu. One is the stadium, which is no longer open. They shut it down. They're going to tear it down and build a new one. As of now. And so then there was the Blaisdell Arena. And then there's this place called Waikiki Shell, which is a outdoor kind of concert facility. So anyway, and it actually got named after this guy, Tom Moffitt, who used to be like the biggest promoter in town. And I actually knew him and actually tried to do business with him once. And more than that, and I got to really acknowledge him and thank him. I could actually call him when there was a concert I wanted to see. I could call him to get like front section seats in the concerts if I wanted. And I paid for them, right? So it wasn't like I was asking for tickets or anything, you know, like that. But I paid for the tickets, but I could call and go, you know, hey, everybody called him Uncle Tom. Hey, Uncle Tom, can I get tickets to see Janet Jackson and, you know, whatever, like up in the front somewhere? And he would give me what was available. Oh, we got row 15, we got row 12, we got, you know, I never got like front row or anything silly like that. But I got like, you know, like row 15, yeah, we got row 20, we got two seats in row 20 if you want those, we'll hold them for you. And they used to hold it for me, and then I would go down and they would RSVP it, whatever. And I would go down to the Blaisdell box office and buy the tickets. And boom, so everybody was like, wow, how come he gets to sit up there? Because they used to give the other radio station guys, right? They used to give the other radio station guys nosebleed seats. And I experienced that as well. Like I saw Frank Sinatra on the monitor when he came to Honolulu. I was sitting way up in the yellow section. I was looking down like, He looked like, you know, one of those little G.I. Joe kind of thingies, but he was on the screen, right? So I experienced everything like that too. But when I caught on to the fact that, oh, you mean I can just make a phone call and reserve good seats? You know, I don't mind paying for them. So anyway, but that was like that. So I got to say thank you, Uncle Tom. Thank you, Tom Moffitt, for all of those things that you did for me. But anyway, so here I am, right? And now it's the second time. And now I'm announcing, you know, this second match. And then they have me do like a couple that evening. Like I did, I think I did three. And they said, can you stay and, you know, for the, I'm like, sure, yeah, whatever you guys want. Hey, no problem. And, you know, because I loved wrestling. So, you know, so I do that. Then we start to talk after the wrestling match. And they go, you know, do you know about wrestling? Like they would ask me, like, do you know, how much do you know about it? I said, well, I followed it like when I was a kid, you know, whatever. And they said, do you think you could actually do commentating? And they said, we could pay you. And I'm like, commentating? Yeah, of course. Yeah, I know all the holds. And so I start running down the, you know, I know the difference between a front face lock and a head lock and, you know, like all this kind of stuff. And I start telling them, you know, what I know. So they decide, okay, let's try the kid out, right? Let's try this kid. So, and I was a kid. I was 27, okay? So for you 27-year-olds out there, don't get offended, okay? Don't, yeah. I thought that, you know, and in my mind, like looking back now, yeah, I was a kid. Okay, so I get this opportunity, right? And I go, wow, okay, I'm going to actually call a match. Like I'm going to do like ringside. So what this was you sit at a table ringside. And, you know, you have a mic and you have headsets and there's a director, and the director is in a truck, in a production truck. So this is a television station thing because these guys were taping for television, right? So that's the other thing, right? I'm going, wow, I'm going to be on TV. That was a big deal for me. Now, this would have been the second time I was on TV. The first time, it was another, you know, that's another podcast, but it was called The Checkers and Pogo Show. And that's another podcast, Hawaiians, okay? But anyway, this was going to be on TV, and I'm like, wow, TV again, here we go. Like, so these things start showing up in my life, right? These manifestations and, you know, crazy ideas coming true kind of thing, right? And so now, right, I'm going to be calling the match, you know, so I get there. They show me, okay, this is your headphones. They introduce me to the director. Oh, this is Charlie. He'll be in the truck outside in the back, right? And this was for a TV station locally called KITV. And the show actually aired at 1 o'clock in the afternoon every Saturday. And that was there. It was from 1 to 1:30 every Saturday. Or maybe it was an hour. Yeah, it was a half hour. It was from 1 to 1:30. So what they would do is they would spend one evening. They would hold the matches on one night. And they would film the entire evening. So we would call all the matches separately, right, as they go down. And so the director would go, all right, we're going to start in 3 minutes, you know, and everybody took their places, right? The audience didn't really know anything. They were just there being the audience. They bought tickets. They came in. You know, we had a reasonably full house. And I was, you know, seated at the table with this other guy. And they invited him, too. And there was one more guy. There was three of us, actually. So when I got there, this other guy was the lead commentator. I was just, you know, I was like third banana or second and third banana, whatever. I was this, you know, second and third guy, right? And this other guy from the radio station I worked at, we changed roles back and forth kind of thing, right? Now, I was the color commentator. So I was the guy that was calling the shots. And the guy next to me didn't really know that much about wrestling. He was a radio guy, but he wasn't really, you know, into that. And so I would give all the color, and the color, you know, was be like, well, he grabs his man by the hair and, you know, boom, right in the turnbuckle or whatever, that kind of thing, right? And I was just repeating what I saw when I was a kid. Everything was from memory, right? And I knew what everything was called. You know, from karate chops to like backbreakers and body slams and whatever and all of that, right? So I knew all of that stuff. So I start calling the matches, and I am like, wow, I cannot wait till you know, people back home like see me doing this stuff, because this is going to be on TV, right? All right, so the other side to this coin is, so I did this for them for like, gosh, it was like about 6 months, I think, something like, I think it was maybe 4 months. Maybe I think we did four of them. So every month they would film one, right? And they would film it. They would cut it up into episodes for the entire month. So there was like 4 half-hour episodes, right, for the month. And then they would play that on television. And then there would be another live event. The tickets would get sold. The people would show up. We'd call the matches again, and it would be the next batch for the next month. And then right after that, they would take a trip to like the neighbor island. So they would have matches on Maui. They would have matches on Kauai, you know, and I was blessed enough to go along with them, and they paid me. So, you know, and that's the one thing I gotta, you know, say that's really important is not only did they pay me, but they paid me well. Like for those days, like when I was 27, $350 was a lot of money. It was a lot of money. And that was for one night's work. When we went out to the neighbor islands and stuff like that, they took care of the food. They took care of transportation. Of course, it was usually, you know, me driving a van and driving the wrestlers around, which was like the ultimate cool thing. Because like these guys wrestled around the world. And here I am, like, chauffeuring them to the airport, and so it was the coolest thing. It was the coolest thing ever. Like, I wish there were cell phones in those days that I could have taken selfies, and then, like, hey, look, I got the Sheik in the back seat, or look, I got, you know, these different people, right? And some of them are no longer here. But, I mean, it was a total trip for me. Like, I couldn't believe, I had to pinch myself every so often. I'm like, am I really doing this? Like, some of these guys were in wrestling magazines that I bought when I was in high school because I was a fan. And now here I am, right? So it was like, so 27, so it was 17 years well, not even 17, but I mean, you know, it was like maybe 10 years out of high school when this happened, right? And I was like 27 now. I was like, wow. And, you know, and so one of my classmates who was actually in fourth grade with me, in a fourth grade class, we did a wrestling demonstration, right? And everything was going good, and we were in wrestling tights and everything. I mean, we did the whole, you know, we were kids acting this whole stuff out, right, in front of the class. And it stopped when I grabbed Richard and you know, showed them what a body slam was. And as soon as I picked him up, because he was a small little Filipino guy. And when I picked him up to, you know, and I was just going to demonstrate, I was not going to body slam him, but my teacher did not know that. And so, like, everything, all right, boys, that's it. You know, that kind of thing, right? So I call Richard and I tell Richard, bro, you're never gonna guess. Because just so happened, I ran into him during these months of filming. And I ran into him in a shopping mall. And I said, you'll never guess. He goes, oh, man, I saw you on TV. And I'm like, you want to come down? Like, I'll get you tickets. And he's like, yeah. So I got him and I think it was his nephew. I got him tickets and they came down and they saw the matches in person. That was good for me. That was like, you know, because I got to take care of one of my friends, right? And I felt good about it and whatever. Now, me in the meantime, this whole, you know, we go through this thing. Now, there was no script given to us or anything. There was nothing, you know, there was nothing that they gave us and they said, okay, here, it's gonna go down like this. There was nothing like that, right? Okay, because we weren't privy to anything scripted or like anything like that. So as far as I saw, what I saw was real. And I saw guys like getting, you know, thrown off the top ropes and hitting cement. Like they got thrown out of the ring. And I saw this guy, I'm not going to mention his name, but I saw this guy, a wrestler, like fly out of the ring over the top ropes and hit the cement on his shoulder, the cement ground. Now, this guy must have been at least 250 pounds and he hit that concrete. And I'm right there calling the action, you know, and I'm like, and there he goes over the top ropes. Oh, my God. I mean, you know, stuff like that, right? I'm doing the color. Mm-hmm. So I thought, like, wow, this is all legit, right? This is real. And because I see these guys, and these guys are actually, I want to say this one match I saw, there was this guy, and he was a Kaneohe Marine, and he wanted to get into the business, and in the wrestling business, he wanted to be a wrestler. And he brought his buddies and stuff, right? And he went through what I would call an initiation. And, you know, and you had these wrestlers actually hitting him for real. Like he was getting hit for real. And his buddies were in the front row. So he had like, I don't know, half of his platoon in the front row. And these guys start standing up and going, hey, that's happening for real kind of thing. Right. And the security guards and there was this police officers that off-duty police officers that were working the place. They were holding these guys back and telling these guys to sit down. Meanwhile, their friend is getting pounded, like, for real. Like, in this initiation rite sort of thing, right? You know, I saw this go down. I'm like, whoa, that's real. Like, so to me, I thought, like, this whole thing was real. And I thought, oh, okay. You know, so I don't know any different, right? And we're into, like, I don't know, maybe the second month of filming or something like that, right? Now, during the third month, this is where, like, I don't know, you know, it's kind of like when you meet your heroes. Like, I've been very blessed in my life to meet a lot of my heroes. I manifested that because, you know, I think about them all the time, right? You know, I did not get to meet Frank Sinatra, you know, but I got to meet my local heroes. I got to meet them all, like almost all of them. In fact, all of them that I was interested in meeting. And I met them, right? And I actually shook their hand and everything. And you know, I was thinking about this when I was 12. Like when I was 12 years old, I was thinking about, you know, oh, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to meet so-and-so. I'm going to meet all the stars. I'm going to, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. those kind of thoughts, 12-year-old thoughts, you know. So anyway, and so this was, there was this one match, and it was a $10,000 check, and it was mounted on the top of a pole. So they called it a pole match. And what it was the first guy that could climb to the top of the pole and grab the check won the match and the $10,000. Okay. Well, we knew the $10,000 was just a, you know, marketing thing. We knew it was just, okay, we knew it wasn't that. But the pole was pretty high and it was secure, and they had to make it secure so two big guys could, like, you know, climb up at the same time, because it was a race kind of thing, race to the check kind of thing. So anyway, it was between the infamous Sheik, who was, you know, I don't even know if he's still alive. If he is, he's very, very old. And you're talking guys from Ric Flair's time, okay? So this goes all the way back to Ric Flair, when Ric Flair was young. He's still around. And we, you know, I see him on social media, right? He's still around. But anyway, and I never got to meet Ric Flair. He came to Honolulu, but I was not involved at the time, so I didn't meet him. But here's the thing, right? So the infamous Sheik was in the match. Now, this guy was my hero, because, like, when I was a kid, I used to love villains. Like, villains, you know, because I was chilling like a villain, right? You know, and I was thinking, yeah, I identify with that guy, you know, this guy, whatever. And so my heroes were the villains, like most of the villains. And the reason why I like this guy is because he was dressed like an Arab sheik, right? He had the outfit going. He had a manager who used to dress in a fez. Like, you know, I mean, so these guys were, his name was the Wizard. And, like, he had these funny shades on. I mean, you guys can Google this stuff. It's up there. And so that was my world when I was a kid, right? So there was no manager, wizard, or anything, but there was the Sheik, and he was still going. And I would say, like, he was in his late 50s when I met him, you know. So if he's alive today, he's very old. But I met this guy, right? And he was kind of spooky. He kind of, you know, in the dressing room and stuff, he didn't talk much. He was very, very quiet. I thought he kind of looked spooky. I kind of got that vibe from him. But I was, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe he's just throwing that vibe, right? Because, you know, this is his thing, right? Throwing that vibe. So anyway, but he was in the match. Now, in the match with him was a local Samoan wrestler, okay? I'll just say the first part of his name, Superfly. Okay, and I can tell you who it's not. It's not Jimmy Snuka. Okay, it's not the guy that Cardi B sings about in her song. It wasn't that Superfly. It was another one. Okay, but I don't want to mention names. Okay, anyway, these two guys are, you know, so they I did find out that, you know, the good guys are called Babyface and the bad guys are called Heels, and you know, back in the day, like, nobody else knew this stuff. Now everybody knows. I mean, internet, right? You know, everybody knows. And so that's common knowledge now. But back in the day, I did not know that. And I'm like, oh, okay. So they said, well, Superfly is going to be Babyface. And Sheik is heel. And of course, you know, I'm like, yeah, well, he has to be, right? That's his whole thing, being a heel, being the bad guy. So these guys go at it, right? And they do what wrestlers do, and they, you know, they do the thing. It's 2 out of 3 falls. I think it was a 30-minute time limit or something like that. Or 1 hour time limit. I forgot what it was, something like that. And so I'm calling the action, and, you know, and I'm going along with this dream that I had that had manifested in my life, and I'm enjoying it. I'm like soaking this thing up. And I can't believe it's me. I just, like, every time I put the headsets on to do this, I can't believe it's me, right? Now, meanwhile, my family back home, my friends back home, the people I know over here, the friends I made over here, and acquaintances, and they all saw me on TV, right? So to them, it was like, oh, well, there's another one of his things, right? You know, that kind of thing. So it wasn't like a big deal or anything, right? I wasn't like a celebrity. I didn't, you know. The only thing that was kind of celebrity-ish about that whole deal was that I made an agreement with this guy, and I won't mention his name or the company. I don't think the company's around anymore, but it was a limousine company, okay? And this guy, I made a deal with this guy. I said, I'll mention your company on TV if you can take me to the matches, you know, in your limousine, and then take me home after. And he goes, oh, yeah, sure. So in those days, right, no cell phone. So I had to give him a time where to pick me up at my house, right? So every night that we did this, I believe it was a Wednesday night. I think it was Wednesday nights. So like once a month on a Wednesday, the limousine would come to my house and pick me up, right? And it would take me down to the matches. Now, the wrestlers would go home in like regular cars. You know, they had trucks and Camrys and I don't know, whatever, Toyotas, Hondas, whatever. They had regular cars, Chevys, whatever, you know. And so here comes the announcer guy, right? And his limousine is waiting out back for him. But there was a reason why I hired the limousine to do that, because I didn't have a license yet. Okay, I was 27 and we had buses. So I was catching the bus every place. You know, I was just doing buses. So I had my license, but I didn't have a car. So I had a license, you know, I used to drive my uncle's truck and stuff, and you know, I used to work with my uncle, but so I didn't have a car. And that was the reason why. And so this guy goes, yeah, and you know, this is really funny how this thing manifested and went down. Because years later, I end up renting a place from his son. Like, I'm like, whoa, this is like, I mean, it was just kind of like that. Like, so you never know where the synchronicities are going to pop up, okay? But they will pop up, okay? Because God is in here. God is in you. God is inside, okay? And God will bring people into your life and set things up in such a way. Now, if you want to say God, you want to say source, you want to say whatever you want to say, okay? However you want to describe that. I'm talking about the creator. I'm talking about the energy of creation that resides within you. Okay, that's what works, okay? Anyway, so here I am, right? And we're calling the action, the Sheik, Superfly, and they're going at it, right? And pretty soon, the Sheik starts to climb the pole, okay? So they get to the part where, you know, they slug it out for a while, they, you know, throw each other out of the ring, whatever, they you know. And then the Sheik starts to climb the pole. And Superfly starts to follow the Sheik up the pole. Now, these guys are solid men. These guys are big dudes. These guys are like, I want to say 220, maybe 230, but these guys are built. They're solid. These guys are, you know, muscle dudes, right? They're like, they're in good shape. So they start climbing the pole. Now, I'm at the bottom. And I thought, like, this whole time, like, the whole couple months I was doing this, right? Because I, like I said, I think I did about 4 months, maybe 5 months with them, something like that. But during the second month was when I found out this stuff, right? And I had thought that everything I saw was just amazing at that point. And I'm like, wow, like I saw this guy fly over the top ropes and hit the cement floor on his shoulder. And I'm like, whoa, okay, that's real. You know, I saw guys got, you know, that initiation thing, right? I got this guy was getting hit in the face, in the stomach, and like he was getting punched out, really. And I'm like, okay, that's real, right? Like so in my mind, as I'm calling the action, I am going, yeah, you know what? This is real. Like wrestling is real. Like, I don't know what people are talking about when they say wrestling is fake. Like, you know, on TV, it looks totally different. When you're up front, like right there ringside, you can see the slaps, you can hear the hits. Like, you can hear it, right? They're doing this, you know, I want to say, with reasonable strength for show purposes. That's how I want to say it. Okay, but they are hitting each other. They are, you know, slamming each other on the canvas kind of thing. And some of them, yeah, they fly out of the ring and they, you know. And I was thinking, like, why? Oh, how did he just get up and shake that off? I mean, these guys are in shape. They were in shape. So anyway, right, they're climbing the pole. Now, I am calling the action, you know, something like, and the Sheik is climbing the pole and he's after the check and Superfly, you know, he's coming up from behind and he, you know, whatever. And I'm calling the action, right? The crowd is screaming. So the crowd, the noise of the crowd is bleeding into my headphones as I'm announcing this stuff, right? And my partner guy, right, the guy I worked with at the radio station, like, he's chiming in. And so we're both going at, you know, I'm looking at him. I'm looking up at the wrestlers. I look back at my partner. I'm looking up at the wrestlers. And so he was, you know, adding color and what. So both of us were doing color at that point. It was a very exciting moment. The crowd was out of control. They were screaming and yelling. You had old ladies that were lining the front section. Like, these old ladies were standing up and I don't know. It was an emotional thing for them, I think. You know, they all got caught up in the moment and they were swearing and yelling. Like, it was pandemonium, as Howard Cosell would say. Those, you old school guys know who that is. But so it was pandemonium, okay? And I'm in the all in the moment in this thing, and, you know, I'm calling this action, and all of a sudden in my headphones, I hear Charlie, the director, in the truck outside in the back, right? And this is what I hear in my headphones.
Watch out for the fire.
That's all I heard. Watch out for the fire, right? And I'm thinking, like, fire? And I look up and I see the Sheik, like, you know, in his hand, right? And I never saw exactly what it was, but I know it was chemicals. I know it was some kind of fluid. I thought it was lighter fluid. I still think it was lighter fluid because of the way it evaporated. But he had a lighter in one hand, and I don't know how he did this. And this was his gimmick. This was his thing. He threw fire, right? When I heard "watch out for the fire," and I looked up at the Sheik, and I saw him ignite the chemicals or whatever he had in his hand, and he threw fire down on Superfly, right? My heart sank to the ground. Like, I could feel my heart in my toes. Like, my heart just went, oh, man. And in my mind at that second, in that split second, I was like, wrestling is fake. I'm like, damn. Like, I wish I wouldn't have seen that. Like, I wish I wasn't a part of that. Because my whole life, right, from small kid time, right? And I mean small kid, like third grade, from third grade, like all the way, right? Here I am, 27. I believe the show part of it, right? Because it's a show, right? It's entertainment. And you know, and now you got people going, oh, the NFL is fake. The NFL is scripted, you know, whatever, right? And I don't know if it is or not. I'm not a football fan. I watch one game a year, Super Bowl, and that's good for me. But, you know, and I don't even know the rules. I don't even know the, you know, whatever. Like, so, but for me, wrestling was my thing when I was in school. I was like, yeah, you know, that kind of thing. And my friends and the kids who knew me in school, and there's some of them listening to the podcast back on my home island. Thanks, guys. I love you guys. Thank you for supporting me. Love you guys. And those guys know that, yeah, I used to do impressions of wrestlers when I was in elementary school, right? And I was doing impressions since since I was like 9, something like that. And so I used to do their voices. I used to buy the magazine, the merch. You know, I was over there, I was buying merch. Mom, please, can we get a wrestling magazine, please? You know, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's the third one this month, you know. And I used to look at all the pictures, never read the articles, maybe once in a while, you know. But I used to look at the pictures from the matches, all the blood, you know, all this stuff, right? So that was my thing. I was like, yeah. And at that moment, when the fire came down, like, my whole image of wrestling was changed forever. And I'm like, wow, wrestling is scripted. And I just... The crowd was still yelling and screaming. The fire had come down. And now, you know, I had to keep going, right? I had to keep going, but it was almost like I was running on empty. It was almost like I was running on empty. And, you know, now when I think about it, the crowd was screaming, and Superfly eventually, you know, pulled him down, pulled the Sheik down, and he got the, you know, so the good guy won, right? And he pulled the check down, and there was a, you know, the crowd was going wild and celebrating and all of that. And I went home in a daze. I was like in a daze. Because I was like, oh, man, like, what did I see tonight? Like, what did I just see? And I had the same feeling throughout my life, in different periods of my life, when I met certain heroes of mine and they did something human. And I saw them or I heard them say something human, something that you don't want to hear your hero say, you know? And in this case, it was something I didn't want to know. Like, I was happy with the delusion. I was totally happy with the wrestling delusion, right? Like, wow, this is real, you know? And when I got there and when I started working, I started doing this thing. And I was like, wow. And I remember asking this one guy, I'm not going to mention his name either, but I ended up working with him later in life. But I asked him, I said, hey, come down and be a commentator with me, because I really thought he was better at being a commentator than the guy I was working with, right? And I told him, I said, I'll get you in. I'll talk to these guys. You know, I'll get you in. No worries. But he said that he was advised from another broadcaster that if he ever wanted, because he wanted to do sports, like real sports, you know, and I knew why. At that moment, I found out why. Because he wanted to do real sports. And he said, if you do something like wrestling, you're going to lose your credibility. Right. And so I understood. I wasn't happy. I was sad about it. I was like, oh man, I really wanted to work with this guy. But I got to work with him later on in life in a much better situation. But anyway, you know, and that happened with this thing along the way with this thing. But I did wrestling for a while, and pretty soon, shortly after that match, they made me lead commentator. You know, so now I was, you know, I didn't get paid anymore. I was getting paid good money, like same amount. I was making $350 a night, and that was one night a month. And for me, that fed me for weeks. That fed me for a couple weeks back in the day, and that was big money, back in the day, right? So and you know, and that's another thing. My concept of money is so like weird, because I used to make so much money in like for you know, 1 hour time, $350. That's $350 an hour back in 1987, right? And so my money thingy, the value of money for me and stuff like that was kind of always really weird, because I go do a commercial in the recording studio, right? That's $250. I'm in the studio for 11 minutes, 15 minutes, like rarely 20 minutes, right? Because I nailed the thing in a few takes. You know, not flexing, I'm just saying what happened. I just go in and read a couple times, fix a couple mistakes, do it a little different, like the way the director wants, and I'm out of there in 15 minutes. And that's 215, so to put it in perspective, that's $250 for 15 minutes. So in my mind, the kind of stuff that I'm experiencing, you know, it's not like when I was a kid and they were making $4 an hour bagging groceries kind of thing, right? You know, I didn't bag groceries. And I was lucky back then too. I don't know. It was just something. I was just lucky. Or maybe it was just what I was manifesting. But we knew this restaurant owner guy, and he allowed me to play at his hot dog stand for, I don't know. I'm sorry. I made $4 an hour. My friends were working for $2.65 an hour bagging groceries at the supermarket. Sorry, I got to think in real time here with my ADHD brain. But yeah, so, you know, so I've always kind of like, I've not known money like everybody else, because the things that I've done has not taken me that much effort. Like, I didn't have to, you know, sweat for an hour to make $300. I mean, you know, but yeah, these things that I enjoy, they just came easy, you know, and things like this, just, it was easy money for me. Like, but I only made it once a month, right? That was a problem. Like, wow, if I could do this like every day, like, you know, Or the other thought was like, wow, if I could go to the mainland, do this in the mainland, I could make thousands of dollars a match. You know, that kind of thing, right? But at that time, when I went home that night, like, I was so sad. I was very grateful. I was grateful I had the job. I was grateful I was on TV. I was grateful that the limo picked me up and took me home. And, you know, I felt like a celebrity announcer because of the limo. Like, it was such a good feeling to get picked up in a stretch and then dropped off in a stretch. And, you know, and so it was, yeah, you know, there was the good side of it. But that was the sword in the bull, so to speak. That kind of killed it, you know. And after that, there were other things that, you know, that happened in the wrestling world that I witnessed that I can't even talk about, not publicly, okay? But, yeah, there was some weird stuff. There was, you know, everything. There's good and bad with everything. But when I found out that wrestling was scripted, my heart sank. My whole world, like, was not the same in regards to wrestling anymore. And so, you know, sometimes the moral of the story is sometimes you don't want to find out. Sometimes you enjoy the delusion, okay? And there's many delusions out there in life right now that people would rather live the delusion, okay, than face the truth, okay? They would rather keep wearing the rose-colored glasses, right, than face the truth. And the biggest thing I think that happened in my life that was that when, you know, when I had to, when I got to the point where, you know, I got to the point where, you know, my uncle got a hold of me and I was 13 years old, right? And he started to red pill me. He didn't red pill me about wrestling because to him it was neither here or there, right? You know, so, but he started to red pill me on life. And now when, you know, when the pandemic happened, right, everybody was like, wow, they started learning all these things that they didn't know, you know, that I knew like years and years ago that I told my uncle, hey, this stuff is never, ever going to happen. And he was like, oh, yeah, you wait. And I did wait. And I said, because I had no choice. And I already learned all this stuff. And to me, it was a bunch of useless information until the pandemic. And then, boom. I saw stuff go down exactly like I learned it from 13. So I understood what was going on around me. There are people that are in therapy right now that don't understand what happened, that don't understand why things are the way they are. And they're having, you know, a little disassociativeness with things, right? There are people that are wearing masks right now, today, without the pandemic, that have been conditioned to wear masks, that are walking around scared, walking around wearing masks because they don't want to get, you know, a virus. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy. But yeah, Hawaiians, it was very hard for me to fathom that wrestling was scripted. And I was like, oh, man. Because the last thing I wanted, right, was to... Oh, sorry, Hawaiians. I gotta go. Hey, we gotta say mahalo to Brother Randy and Sister Jerry over there at Island Club and Spa in Kaka'ako. Yeah, and the Voice Master family of service companies are fine sponsors. Also, AFMHawaiiMusic.com with Brother Darren Chinen and his music. You can hire him for your party, your special occasion. Just go to AFMHawaiiMusic.com. Oh, man. So, you know, the bottom line, Hawaiians, okay? When you guys have your dreams, okay, sometimes you got to take them like you get them. And sometimes what you think isn't really what is, okay? So enjoy life for everything. All right. Till next time, I'm Junior Keiko Ever Jr. saying mahalo and aloha.